Hi everyone, welcome to STEP's audio channel. We are very excited to share our content from STEP's events to learn all about the latest trends in startups, digital media, fintech, future tech, and wellness in emerging markets. You can find us on Enerami, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Make sure to subscribe to your favorite channel, and we hope you enjoy the content.
My name is Daniel Callahan. I'm Senior VP for Dubai Silicon Oasis. We are one of the major free zones, obviously, within Dubai. In terms of startups and entrepreneurship, we host DTech, the entrepreneurial campus, also home to Sandbox Accelerator program. So we're passionate about helping Dubai stay at the forefront of entrepreneurship and startup all over the world.
Very well qualified. Thomas.
Hey guys, I'm Thomas. I'm with Start2 Group. We're a startup accelerator completely focused on global scanning of startups and scale-ups. We run 14 offices around the globe, trying to connect all the continents except Africa and the Middle East so far. That has changed 1 week ago, but I'm going to tell you more about that in a second. Per year, we work with approximately 500 startups, trying to help them go global. Very happy that already 10 of those turned out to be unicorns.
Excellent. Thank you, Dr. Thomas. Rana, please.
Hi, everyone. My name is Rana. I'm the founder of UAE's first climate tech startup, The Surplus. Essentially, we help companies map their underused resources and exchange them to reduce their emissions profitably. And I'm also doing my PhD at Cambridge University in industrial resilience, so I'm a little bit of a geek about the subject.
Thank you very much. And I'm Elliot Denham, the head of programs here at Orsia Capital. Notably, I run the team that runs the Sandbox Accelerator program that Daniel mentioned. So the panelists today are very well qualified. We've got a startup and academic perspective. We've got a sort of a scale-up perspective out of Germany, and then we've got more of a governmental perspective as well. So before we get started into why is Dubai a magnet for global accelerators and entrepreneurs, I'd like to define what makes a great accelerator in the first place. Rana, I know you've been through multiple programs all around the world in various endeavors. Could you just talk us through what really stands out for a great program from your perspective, please?
I think, honestly, that's a great question, Elliot, because on one hand, if you're a startup at very early stage, your needs are going to be very different. But if you're a startup at growth stage, there's also some really key pillars that are fundamental for a good accelerator. The first one would probably be having mentors that really understand the problem, that have perhaps thought through it multiple times. Secondly, I would say also access to non-dilutive funding. A lot of startups are opting to bootstrap, especially in this kind of current state we've been in the last few years, and having access to non-dilutive funding would help them accelerate their growth. And thirdly is having industry partners that they would be able to either pilot up with or scale with.
So from a non-dilutive funding perspective, perhaps that's the role of a government and or a corporate sponsor. What's your take on that, Daniel?
Well, to me, the mentorship element is what's key there, you know, giving access to quality mentors. We've had recently MIT, we've had Start2 Group as well, which is very prescient. We would also say, you know, exposure to networks and a sense of community is crucial. We try to foment that at DTech. We house it at Dubai Digital Park, and we make sure that Thomas might agree, hopefully, over the past week, that all the startups and scale-ups and the founders, you know, they get a real kind of holistic experience. It's not there's a bit of fun, there's a bit of challenge, there's a bit of work, and that helps, I think, you bring rising tide lifting all boats in that sense. One final point. And I know Sandbox is like this. I think there's a 2% acceptance rate. I think a quality accelerator, there's a sense of challenge and expectation. And so, you know, that from the founders that they realize, and you know, it's not just going to be a bit of a jolly. There's a real expectation that something should come out of this.
So we've got non-dilutive funding, exposure to network, exposure to good mentors, an element of commitment and challenge. Yeah. What about yourself, Thomas? What would you add to that?
I can just like second what my colleagues here said. One thing that struck me though when I came to Dubai is that I think to run a great accelerator, it takes even a bit more than in some other countries, because here you have quite a lot of acceleration space, but not so much local high quality startups yet, because the startup system is still developing. Hence, you need to look outside the country, you need to attract foreign startups, high quality startups. And based on my experience working with like 1,000 plus European startups, I have to tell you, the UAE is still kind of a black box for them. So what it takes to really run a great accelerator is, I think, to go out, go in those markets, educate the startups about those great opportunities that are here, allow them to come here to explore what we just did, Daniel, and in a great way. And then I think, you know, you can attract them into the accelerators here and make them grow here.
So how could accelerators based in Dubai and or in the UAE potentially help with transparency into that black box of understanding the environment, the business environment, the culture environment, and of course the offerings and potential that the country and the region offers?
I can tell you what startups love the most is hear from their peers, right? So if you would, for example, manage to bring sandbox startups together with German startups, let's say, talk about the experience, then bring in some experts, like Daniel mentioned, the network, to really make them understand this amazing ecosystem that is developing here. That, I think, would then trigger the startups to come here, experience it firsthand, and set up shop, found their team, and grow in the Middle East from here.
Thank you. Rana, just turning the line of questioning slightly to your academia background, recognizing you're studying for your PhD and you're also an aspiring and hopefully a world-class entrepreneur yourself. To what degree does academia and the ecosystem of academia support you as an entrepreneur, and what role does academia play in supporting founders in general?
Elliot, that's a really great question. And honestly, at first, I didn't think there was a correlation. To be honest, I'm not a huge fan of academics. They do tend to weigh along sometimes like consultants. Sorry for any consultants in the room. But one thing I do think that is incredibly critical is that universities, especially top-class universities like the MIT program that was run at DSO, gives you access to an entire backlog of an ecosystem that exists in multiple jurisdictions. So to give you an example, after we completed the MIT program, we got plugged into the MIT startup database, and that actually gives you partnership opportunities for world-class, massive organizations that are looking for solutions. So we also have kind of research output that obviously falls within some aspects of the department. So for example, in my department in Cambridge, there's IFM Engage, which is actually specialized in supply chain efficiency and materials manufacturing. And they do an enormous amount of commercial development, which allows the startups to also pilot, test, grow, and of course, continue their journey onward. So there is actually a really critical link there.
Do you think that the level of maturity of the startup ecosystem is directly pegged to the level of maturity of the academia ecosystem?
That's a hard one, because there's a lot of spin-outs from the universities. And sometimes while the research makes a lot of sound sense and it is compelling, it doesn't make for a good business. So I think that, there's always a distinction between what makes a really good business and what makes a really good research paper, and being able to find a healthy balance between the two. Because we've met other founders that have, created these spin-outs from the universities, and they've taken 7 or 8 years to mature. And by that time, a new layer of technology has come and completely sweep that off the market.
Daniel, I know that at Dubai Silicon Oasis, you are home to RIT, Rochester Institute of Technology out of New York. There's a branch there. Equally, DTEC, you've mentioned. What role does the likes of DSO play in facilitating the ecosystem development between these various stakeholders, founders, founders in country, founders out of country, academia, corporates for POCs, and otherwise?
Well, that's a really good way to frame it, Elliot. And as a recovering consultant, I accept your apology.
Sorry, Daniel.
But it's very true. And it's part of my background is coming from that. I've seen worked with a lot of governments worldwide and seen how this is done well, how it's not done so well. The lesson that we try to bring to DSO is that the role of government really is to be facilitative, to move the needle for all of these players, whether that be via funding or regulation and policy, and ensuring that there's a nice quality of life or a livable environment. That's it. And then you're meant to get the hell out of the way for these brilliant people to do what they're great at. And that would be, we're connectors. That's what we should be seen as. Mm. And hopefully we're world class at that. And we want to be good at something too. Mm. And the likes of RIT, as you mentioned, so we have a huge a talent pool there of 1,000+ graduates who are eager and hungry to get some real world experience. So what we try to do is we have 30,000 member companies on site, all who have employment needs. Mm. So if we can make the connection between the students and the grads and these companies and do it in an interesting way so that we can give them some kind of sandbox, or access to innovation centers so that they can run wild with their ideas and see what works, what doesn't work. They can make it and break it, make it again and break it again. We'll let them pilot and test. That's really the facilitation, I think, that we should be doing, and shouldn't worry about too much else.
So it's going back to the point around just exposure, connections, networking, mentorship, and insight, kind of facilitating a metaphorical sandbox to let the fun happen organically and try and prod, you know, where you can.
Yeah, and then once you see what's working well, you want to leverage that, right? And then that's where you want to allocate your resources to. Yeah, so that's the consultant that we're speaking again, sorry, but yeah, that's what you should do.
Thomas, you started your career in Germany, and now you've been helping thousands of startups across the world, German startups and otherwise. How does the UAE and Dubai stand up against some of the leading tech hubs for startups and entrepreneurs worldwide, in your opinion?
First of all, I want to follow up on what you just said, Daniel, about like the way you work. And I feel like also like the whole country, the government here works. It's really an entrepreneurial way, right? Mm. It's like trial, error, see what works, and we're going to go with that. And to be honest, in Europe or in Germany, we're not used to that kind of like philosophy by government. So that's really something that stands out truly like globally for me, even if you compare it to the Asian countries. So when I come here, I feel a bit like being in a scale-up. It's just a scale-up nation. A lot of things happening at the same time. Crazy speed, crazy hunger for innovation, for new solutions. And I think that's what also the entrepreneurs, the founders that we brought here really enjoy. Like, you find like-minded people everywhere. Everybody understands that what you want to do, and everybody wants to help. Also, that approach of a community, a true community, not only called ecosystem. Those are the two things that I would really, I think, point out.
You touched upon sort of the pace, the innovation of the city, which is far beyond just the startup ecosystem. How does that compare against other cities in the world? And, you know, where do you think some of those sort of initiatives trickle down to the startup ecosystem that is unique here? And how is that beneficial to founders?
Well, I think the market that comes closest might probably be Singapore.
Okay.
From my feeling, and we've seen like great opportunities and great success for our startups in Singapore. Maybe to give you a little bit of background, if you talk to European founders, 80, maybe 90% of them talk about US when it comes to internationalization. The US is the biggest market. It's culturally like similar to Europe, is what they think. It's a very common mistake and a big problem, actually. Also, they completely underestimate how complex, how diverse the US is, and how much competition you find there. In a market like Singapore, super dense, still like also more open to innovation, less competitive, that's usually where their first steps of internationalization are extremely successful. And I mentioned it before, I mean, we just stepped into the market here in Dubai. But from what I've learned in the last year working with the market, I expect even more opportunities, especially in that regard for startups.
Elliot, one thing that Thomas said there just flickered in me is that, and again, coming from the outside, I'm only here less than 1 year, but it's the speed of decision making, which is phenomenal. Things can, a decision can be taken and can manifest within days or weeks at most. Now, it's a double-edged sword, because you can, if you quickly make bad decisions, that's not a good thing. But if you're doing the right things and making good decisions, and they're compounded one upon the other, you can start to build some real competitive advantage relatively quickly.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can totally resonate with that. I've grown up here. And in fact, Rana and I were talking backstage about how, and Rana has also grown up here, how much things have changed in the past decade, let alone 2 decades or longer. Rana, I wanted to bring that point to you that Daniel just mentioned then. Why Dubai? Why do entrepreneurs want to come here? Why do they want to be here? I mean, you've probably seen over the past 2 decades, the appeal of the city, the appeal of the country has increased and blossomed. And perhaps we're, you know, far from the plateau point. Why do people want to be here from a regulatory standpoint, from a lifestyle standpoint? And if you're able to lean upon some of your experience growing up here as well, and some of the positive changes you've seen, that would be excellent.
Thank you, Elliot, for that. I might be biased because I love Dubai. I've grown up here. This is my home. But I think from, you know, an entrepreneurial standpoint, there's a few things that I think that we have that there is direct correlations. For example, we all know how safe UAE is as a place to live as a woman. So that might attract a lot more female entrepreneurs, which might be lacking access to resources in other areas of the world. Obviously, we're also in a perfect geographical position to be able to bring in a lot of the underrepresented founders in the ASEAN region, in the African region. And there is some incredible innovations over there. It's not just about the US and European ecosystem. Sorry, Dr. Thomas, but you know, there's so much potential innovation out there. Now, I can give also an example as well. Now, UAE was the first country in the world to actually appoint a chief minister of AI in 2016. Now, if that's a progressive and bold move, that should signal to the world that, look, you know, there is a lot happening over here. There's a lot of potential. The government has issued enormous amounts of federal strategies that are just building and adding to the UAE's capacity. So an example of that is the UAE Centennial in 2071. There's also the Dubai Digital Strategy. UAE also has their own circular economy policy and council as well. So these are all to show that sustainable development, digitization, and rapid innovation is on the table. Now, the uptake for the private sector is a separate discussion. But as far as government goes, we are far ahead, I believe, much more the rest of the world. And I think in 2021, we even listed top 10 digital economies. Actually, we made the top 10 list in the world, which was really impressive considering, you know, that the time and the context of 2021 and the COVID as well.
Do you think there's been a move towards or away from high level initiatives and the grassroots initiatives that actually end up actioning and implementing some of those high level policies? And to what extent is that more favorable for entrepreneurs moving to the region?
To be honest, I don't know if I can speak so well to that point, but I do believe that there is definitely a kind of reciprocal relationship between the two, because if grassroots initiatives do form, then the government will take notice of it and, of course, be able to make a great success out of it and create an example out of it, creating economies out of scale from those concepts. On the reverse side, obviously, there are several things that are issued from kind of a top-down approach as well, which can accelerate and catalyze some of that creativity too.
Excellent. That kind of goes back to your point, Daniel, around like having a metaphorical sandbox, bring the right people together, let them crack on with it, and then intervening when need be.
Yeah, intervention. That's a great word. And there should only ever be an intervention when it's justified, I think.
I'd like to move the conversation to fundraising. I think probably you're well qualified to add your opinion here, Thomas. The role of great accelerators is to connect, facilitate, challenge, critique, but of course give exposure from a publicity perspective, but also hopefully from an investment perspective for those businesses that indeed are seeking such investments. To what degree does the role of investment in accelerator programs play a level of importance? And how do the best accelerators around the world, from your experience, deliver an investment-oriented program or support to entrepreneurs?
That's a really tricky question. First of all, tricky because fundraising is a difficult topic, right? You have huge quality differences in startups in every market. And we see it every day that startups that don't get funding in Germany, in Europe, are desperately trying to get out. Let's go to the US, there's like the money that we can get. Let's go to Singapore, and obviously also the typical cliche, let's go in the Middle East because money grows on the trees here. And it's, to be honest, exactly those startups you do not want to work with, because we all know venture capitalists in all areas in the world, they want to see traction in their market first before they want to invest. Hence, a startup that comes here will take even longer to fundraise here than they would have done in their home market where they have traction. So I would say when it comes to kind of the motivation, fundraising should not, or should only to like a little percentage be the motivation. Mm. That being said, the ones that come here that then gain traction, obviously they also want to use the traction to get fundraising, and the support in a foreign ecosystem is crucial that a accelerator needs to deliver. You ask how well do they do it? Mm. I think they all have the headlines, we help you fundraise, but the quality differences are huge.
Rana, from your perspective, having been through programs, have you noticed a significant difference in perhaps the quality of the program, the experience as an entrepreneur, the value you've taken away, the network, the connections from those that have a funding element versus not? And if so, was it more competitive, less competitive, or indeed neutral?
We've done 6 accelerator programs in 2 years.
Wow.
So we've been through quite the loophole, and I find them really important, honestly. Number one, to be able to build the right skills, right? Because let's be honest, when you're a startup in the beginning and you're bootstrapped, you might not locate the right skill set that you need to, but that doesn't mean you can't upskill it. If you've got the right team with the right attitude, they can upscale, and these accelerators are super critical. But I don't think that's to say that necessarily the ones that offer funding versus not offering funding are better than the others. Mm. I think it depends who's running the program. Again, I might be biased towards DSO because they're great. But in my honest opinion, some of the best programs have been run highly specialized, as in they know exactly the types of founders they want to onboard from a startup perspective. You might have a different perspective for this. So there was another program that we ran on that was specifically for female founders. And I found that to be extremely effective because there's a certain set of criteria or challenges that female founders might face without being too specific about it, right? In terms of fundraising, partnerships, various things. So I found them to be generally more effective if they're more kind of specific in terms of the startups that they're trying to attract and the cohort they're trying to build, because that symbiotic relationship between you essentially become colleagues. You're spending time together in the same space, and you're brainstorming with each other. You're helping each other out with your pitch. So I think that the types of startups that they attract is really important. So because sometimes you end up getting more out of your colleagues in the accelerator program than what you initially had in mind, which is for funding, for example.
Yeah, that's a really good point you make, actually. Having run Sandbox for 4 cohorts now, I've kind of got 2 key observations, and I always tell founders: number one, you get out what you put in. So if you're engaging, you're going to get much more juice from the fruit than if you're not. And number two, like you alluded to, Daniel, the role of an accelerator is to facilitate, but it certainly isn't gospel. And it's up to the founders to take on and engage as much as they can, take on what advice and filter and apply it accordingly. But it's at the end of the day, it's up to the founding team, the management, to decide, do we go left or do we go right? Because even in the same accelerator program, different mentors may say go left or go right. And those that are indecisive end up not doing either, or trying to accommodate both sides rather than decisively saying, I'm going left and here's the reason why. And so with that, engage, you get out what you put in, but equally, learning from your peers and your mentors maybe just as much, if not more, as you alluded to, Rana, than actually what the program alludes to. And that's the networking element, isn't it?
Definitely. And it's something that's just kind of I'm realizing over time now. It's about the people and the founders. I mean, the team of founders that Thomas has brought from Germany this week. I mean, if you didn't know what their company was or what they did, each of them as individuals, I mean, I totally buy into them. And you put them all together in one company. I don't know what they might come up with. It could be amazing. As long as you've got the right kind of raw materials, I see us as kind of the factory, like the gigafactory. They talk about the thing that builds a thing. If you focus on getting that right, and as long as the quality of people that are coming in are right, I think then we can be able to trust in the processes, as you said, all that architecture that you put in place in your programs, Elliot. It should be more of a slam dunk than not.
To what degree do you think then the awareness of what actually happens inside on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis of a program is communicated to founders? Because like you alluded to some degree, there's a bit of serendipity, there's a bit of chance and whatnot. And again, the experience of one founder versus another throughout the same program will vary significantly. Do you think that accelerators have an opportunity to communicate in more detail as to what is expected of the next period of time, whether it's a couple of weeks, couple of months, or even longer?
That's a good one. Rana, would you have a view on that as you've been through several?
Yeah, I think one thing that's really helpful that we found incredibly helpful was that a lot of accelerators, I mean, look, I'm speaking from previous experience, the companies that were running the accelerators back in my day, I'm not going to name any names, but they're very, a lot of them are from the kind of resource intensive space. They're not qualified. they don't actually understand what startups need, nor do they actually understand who needs to be trained through the accelerator and what they actually need to, what kind of program they need to put them through. So I think on one hand, what I found a really effective, you know, kind of recipe for this is that it's kind of more hands-on than just bringing in the founders. So what I found really effective about this program was you have to have as many of your founding team there as possible. Mm. You need to be hands-on engaged. Everybody needs to be on the same page, because then friction starts coming up, because there's some things that you might work through that won't necessarily come up in daily operations when, you know, you're trying to keep afloat. You know, you're quite busy in a startup. It's a very fast-paced environment. But ones that force you to really slow down and look at the details, I find them to be extremely effective at executing that plan. Whether they kind of communicate the program details, sometimes they change. It's okay. Mm. But, you know, the most organized ones are not necessarily the best ones at executing.
Thomas, yeah. You've got something to add there.
Yeah, just a little anecdote I want to add, because we measure it across all our programs, is what do startups buy into when they join our programs, and how do they give feedback afterwards? Completely different.
Yeah.
Like, the thing that they're looking for the most, and like there's the crucial decision point, afterwards doesn't matter at all anymore. And for example, we talked about a lot about peer work, right? How important that is. For a startup, before they take the decision, usually not relevant at all. Afterwards, same experience for us, one of the most important factors.
And that makes me think, one of the startups from the MIT program, I remember asking them up for feedback, and they told me, again, the thing that they got the most out of it was that they were challenged how to think. Almost totally broken down, right? It wasn't so much about the project anymore. They were taught, given you kind of neural pathways about thinking about it and taking the problem then from a different direction.
That's really refreshing to hear, actually, because that was perhaps never a KPI of the program itself. Mm-hmm. But to have that feedback, it showcases, again, the breadth and depth and diversity that founders in the same cohort experiencing the same program can take away, which is often far more than, you know, what is listed on a website.
Yeah, I think maybe you're kind of alluding to the kind of the cookie cutter. It's kind of the copy and paste. Everyone goes through the same program, and it's not kind of personalized.
Yeah.
And as Rana said, that some people need, you know, it needs to be calibrated differently for each individual, probably. Never mind each company.
Yeah, absolutely right. I think with founders, you know, whether they go through a program that is with investment an investment element or without, they have one shared commonality. It doesn't matter B2B, B2G, B2C, whatever. They have one asset, which is their time. So evaluating programs, just as evaluating one's day and plans, they've really got to be thinking about ROTI, return on time invested, because that is what is asked of them, at the very least, if not equity in their business. To what degree, Thomas, do you think that founders, especially as they start scaling up, need to segment their day, their plan, their quarterly goals, and start tracking that from a time perspective, no least a financial perspective?
Learning discipline and focus, I guess, is one of the most important learning journeys you can have as a founder. And you can really see the difference then when they reach the scaling phase, because if they're not able to handle those 10 million different things that approach them suddenly, and they can focus and they can prioritize and they can delegate, then they're not going to scale. So it makes all the difference then.
Equally, if they haven't built a strong foundation, then the cracks become even more evident as they start scaling. As we begin to wrap up the panel, I'd like to ask Rana, or state, according to research, there are 70,000 millionaires in Dubai, 220,000 millionaires in the UAE. Equally, you mentioned safety, you mentioned the lifestyle. To what degree does Dubai itself as a center become conducive to entrepreneurs? And at what stage? Is it perhaps better for the earlier stages, the later stages, the growth stages?
I think, my idea came to life here. So I've seen the whole process from the beginning, but I'm starting to meet more founders that find it really effective at growth stage. Reason being is they've kind of got a very clear idea of what they need to execute. They understand various things, as, you know, Thomas said earlier as well. They're also very aware of some of their shortcomings, but they're also very disciplined. Now, obviously Dubai it's got a million and one opportunities for the millionaires. But the great thing is there's a lot of impact-driven startups here as well. So just to give you an example, on my LinkedIn earlier this month, I saw that there is more B Corps coming out of this region. And that's something that's incredibly important, right? If we're having, you know, impact-driven startups here, that it's not just, you know, they will enter Dubai as their end market, but it could be, you know, they're born in Dubai or they grew in Dubai and then they end up accelerating into various other markets outwards as well. But what's really exciting for me is that this is the second year of sustainability. Impact is becoming incredibly important. And that's something that, you know, to your point earlier, we found incredibly important to keep that discipline as well. So from early on, we said, we're going to start trying to apply to become a B Corp. And that kept us really focused and on track. But for an early stage startup, I think, you know, the sky is the limit. We just weren't seeking investment at that stage, so I can't talk about that point. But yeah, I'd say early to growth stage.
Thank you. Dr. Thomas, you work with startups all around Europe, all around the world. What would you say to them about why they should be considering Dubai and the UAE?
I think it goes back to what I said before. If you want to, like, come to that ecosystem or to that country that really understands entrepreneurship, has it in its DNA, and tries to help you win in the market, but also in the GCC region, in the MENA region, and globally, then I think Dubai is the place to be.
And with that, we wrap it up.
Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. You can find our content on Anghami, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. Follow us on social media at Step Conference, and let's stay in touch.